Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Email Design Podcast, where we discuss the latest trends in email design development. We are your hosts. I'm Kevin Mandeville.
And I'm Jason Rodriguez.
And today on the program, we're going to be talking about iOS 9 rendering quirks and everything that's new with the new OS, and talking a little bit about hybrid slash spongy development. But we've got some big news on the block. Great rumor mill talk here, water cooler talk, Jason, about our best friend Dreamweaver. Adobe announced that Dreamweaver is actually going to be integrated, moved to, we're not even sure based on the language they used in the article, but Dreamweaver is going to be updated with brackets. So a couple years ago, Adobe kicked off the open source brackets project, which was a code editor specifically for the web. And it's gained a tremendous amount of momentum since they've launched it. They've gotten over 350,000 users a month with it, a really active and vibrant community. You should go and look at like the Trello board they have, mm-hmm. of feature requests and the development on it. But what they've said is, and I want to read directly from the article, they said, as our team discussed possibilities to improve Dreamweaver's code editor, we kept coming back to a number of ideas that were successful in brackets, such as live preview and the inline editors. We quickly realized that it made perfect sense to use brackets as the base for an improved code editing experience rather than trying to replicate its features in Dreamweaver. So what does this mean? Over the next few months, we will be hard at work integrating brackets into Dreamweaver. Dreamweaver users will get all of brackets' benefits along with advanced capabilities you might be familiar with already, like preprocessor support, inline editors, and code hinting for multiple languages. The brackets open source project itself will remain independent. So those were the key two paragraphs from the article. Mm-hmm. So brackets is going to remain untouched as its open source project. So if you are a brackets user today and worried about Dreamweaver interfering your experience, it doesn't sound like that's going to happen at all. Brackets users can continue to use the editor as they see it today and any developments that come from the open source side. But what we're more interested about is the Dreamweaver component to it, which is what it's definitely the number one editor for mm-hmm. email designers and developers today. They are going to get more of the brackets experience than the Dreamweaver experience today, which is, I think, very confusing to a lot of existing Dreamweaver users, because they did say they were going to bring brackets into Dreamweaver, but they did say in the article it made more sense to use brackets as the base for an improved experience rather than Dreamweaver. So a little bit of contradiction there. But Jason, I want to ask you, what do you think is ultimately going to happen to Dreamweaver, and what do you think the response is going to be from the email community?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I think they're essentially going to use brackets as the basis for improving Dreamweaver's code editor. It feels like Dreamweaver hasn't really gotten a good update for God knows how many years at this point.
Let me ask you, do you think they're going to really like just start from scratch and not even work off of Dreamweaver at all? Just like use brackets as the base experience to start from?
I don't think so. I don't think Adobe has a good reputation for ripping any of their existing applications down and building them back up from scratch. So I think it's essentially going to be brackets replacing whatever engine they use for Dreamweaver's code editor right now. But along with that, hopefully that means Dreamweaver users will have access to all the awesome plugins and extensions that brackets users have. And hopefully that means too that Brackets tends to be a very lightweight, kind of quick, speedy application. So hopefully that translates to Dreamweaver as well. But I think I'm hopeful that it improves Dreamweaver a lot for all their existing users. But I also have the fear that it's going to end up being this weird kind of hybrid mashup of brackets and Dreamweaver as it exists today. So I'll be curious to see what they actually do. But I think it's going to be kind of meshed on top of Dreamweaver and not as the basis of an entirely new code base for Dreamweaver itself.
Do you think it's going to make it better or worse? Or
I think it'll end up making it better. I think that first release, it has potential to be a little bit worse, because it might be done in a very clunky way, similar like artboard support in Photoshop, which I absolutely hate. Like, it's a great idea. It works awesome in like Sketch or something. But when they try to dump it into like Illustrator and Photoshop and stuff, I thought it was a terrible implementation. So I think it's going to follow that same trajectory where it's going to be a little bit awkward at first, but hopefully the benefits you get with using brackets in Dreamweaver, mainly all of those new features, all of those extensions and plugins and that open source community around brackets, will make it better for existing Dreamweaver users. So I think there's going to be some growing pains, but I think it's a good step in the right direction for Adobe because it feels like Dreamweaver hasn't had a significant, really good update in a long time.
I actually really like brackets as an editor. I don't use it, but every time I've used it, I've had a pretty good experience with it. I really like it. I actually think this will make Dreamweaver a better editor. And especially, I think you and I both coming more from a web background really like brackets because of it. You know, and I never really thought of it taking a lot of components from Dreamweaver until this article. I never really thought about it because I in my mind, associated it more with the web and compared it more to Sublime Text and Atom and Coda or whatnot. But it does have a lot of similarities to Dreamweaver. And I think it's ultimately going to make it better. And I think for somebody like me, think it's going to be better. I think what's going to be funny, though, is that I think the email design and development community is ultimately going to not like the changes for whatever reason. I suspect it sounds like they want to reduce the complexity of the application a little bit, make it a little bit simpler like brackets is at the moment, and cut out a lot of the features. And I think somewhere along the way, they're going to get rid of some small feature like expanded tables mode or validation or something that a lot of email developers, for whatever reason, really care about. And that's just going to really irk them to no end and really ultimately hating the changes because they're going to lose something small like that, which personally, and I talked to everybody, we have Litmus Builder. It's like a competitor to Dreamweaver here as an editor for email design and development. I get it. A lot of email developers care about that stuff. I don't think it's needed personally. Like I think you can live without it when it really comes down to it, but they've just grown so accustomed to these different types of features. So I think it's funny. I think from my view and my standpoint, it's going to make it better, but I almost feel like the community won't be receptive just because of how hardcore these users are about Dreamweaver and the experience they've had for pretty much the past, like, what, 10 years? It's been the exact same thing. So.
And I feel like, too, that might be the result of, I can't imagine, I don't know if this is true or not, so if anybody at Adobe's listening, they can absolutely correct me, but I can't imagine they are considering email designers as like their core audience for Dreamweaver. They're trying to, I feel like with this approach, they're trying to get more modern web developers to start using Dreamweaver again. So I'm sure a lot of people have jumped ship to Sublime Text, Atom, whatever, you know. So it feels like they're trying to get them back with Dreamweaver, and that's going to be at the expense for people that have loved the fact that Dreamweaver hasn't been updated much in the past 10 years, and that's namely email designers. I think you're right. They might lose something, and with it, we could see a lot of email designers kind of jumping ship, which if they do, Builder's free to use right now.
That's such a great point, though, in the fact that Dreamweaver was never designed for the email community and audience. It has always been for the web and with the web focus. And the only reason why it's been so good for email is because the product development has been so bad for so long. And they haven't been able to change or update it to meet the modern web standard. So it sounds like they're really trying to get back to their roots of doubling down on the web designer and developer audience. And with that, they're going to leave out a lot of the email designer and developer audience, I think. So that's such a great point, is that they really don't have the interests of the email community at heart for anything that they do. They're focused on the web community. And that's what the editor still, even though a lot of email designers and developers use it, still the number one use for it, for certainly is for the web. So that's such a great point to make, though. An important distinction for all of us to remember is Adobe is really not in it for us. So we can't get, I guess, too mad about it when we really don't make up a large part of the user base.
We'll see what happens. It'll be curious to check out.
Great talking.
I'll have to download. I don't even think I have Dreamweaver installed on my computer right now. I'll have to crack open my Creative Cloud subscription and download and see what they end up doing. Cool. So moving on a little bit, away from Adobe and over to Apple. iOS 9 was released pretty recently. It's already got tons of downloads. Apple users are always quick to update to the latest operating system. So we took a look at what iOS 9 means for email designers. There's good and bad news. A lot of weird bad news, a lot of weird quirks that have been noticed, but some good stuff too. So we just want to chat about a little bit and see what's changed. So I guess we'll start with the bad news first. Remy, who is a good litmus friend, he's super active over on the community, had a great write-up for iOS 9 beta before it was actually released. But we've actually found out most of these bugs made their way through to the production release. But the first big one was that iOS 9 now has interesting zooming mechanism that's kind of carried over from Safari and how iOS 9 handles rendering a web content, which is essentially what an email is, that can break certain layouts. So it can affect rendering of essentially inline block level elements on your email campaign. So a lot of people use a technique like that for product grids or images next to each other. But this new mechanism can break some stuff. And there's a bug with the actual code for those display inline block elements, where if there's a space between the two HTML elements in your code, it can affect the layout of that as well. So some people might see some broken layouts depending on how they actually code things and how it interacts with iOS 9's new zooming mechanism and that inline block bug. We noted last episode that there was a bug with the general sibling selector in Android that Justin Koo over at Fresh Inbox pointed out, and that's actually made its way into iOS 9 as well. So if you're using the general sibling selector for whatever purpose, a lot of people use it for interactive emails. If you're using it for in conjunction with pseudo selectors like hover, then you could see your emails not working correctly in iOS 9. Good things is that there's a fix for it, which we mentioned both last episode and we'll link to in the show notes for this episode. And one of the weirdest things is this padding issue on your emails, but only in iPad and not on iPhone, where there will be padding added to the left and right of your email layout. The weirdest thing, though, is that when you rotate your device, your iPad, from portrait to landscape and back again, the padding can, in fact, go away. So there's some interesting discussions over on the community we'll link to as well, detailing that kind of weird issue and some people's fixes for that.
Need James White to get back in.
Yeah. This other yeah, absolutely. See if you can dig into and figure out what's going on. Good news, though, is this is awesome. I absolutely love this, and I haven't had the opportunity to take advantage of it yet, but I really want to because I think it opens up a lot of possibilities. iOS 9 adds support for responsive images, which has been in there since iOS 8, but they've made it a little bit more flexible by the fact that you can declare actual width values for displaying those images. But responsive images use an HTML attribute, which is source set. So if you're coding an image, you usually use source for the path of your image, but you can include source set and declare multiple image paths. And now you can declare an actual image device width, screen size width, to enable those specific images for different devices. So this is an amazing way to start enhancing your emails for different users. And it almost allows for a level of art direction in your email images, because a lot of images, we're all used to using flexible images right now. But if you're using specific images that just kind of fluidly shrink down on mobile devices, the actual content of the image itself might not be that visible, or people won't be able to see it or get the information from it that well. But these responsive images allow you to declare different images for different device widths. So you can kind of custom tune those images so that you can display exactly what you want for those different screen sizes, which is awesome.
I just want to jump in real quick there. I mean, it's great for performance reasons, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to serve smaller images on mobile, I think that's especially the key part of the whole responsive images and source set. But I also think it's great for dynamic content, mm-hmm. and providing for a lot of companies who use dynamic content, which is image-based a lot of the times, you know, just creating a dynamic image with different content, being able to now use responsive images not only in the content but in the actual design aspect of it. Mm-hmm. So it can actually reduce code complexity in that sense. So you don't necessarily need to have like these tables in which you're showing and hiding different images. It could just be one image and you're serving up a different image based on, you know, the source set here, and the screen size. So I think that's an interesting part of responsive images that we could see as it relates to really the overall design for emails. And I don't expect to change anytime soon. I think it's going to be a while for email developers to pick up on this. But I really think, especially for dynamic content, apart from the obvious performance benefits, that could be an interesting use case for responsive images.
Yeah, I'm curious. To my knowledge, I don't think Android clients or Gmail support source set yet. I might be wrong, so this is still more of an Apple specific thing, but it's definitely awesome, and hopefully more clients will actually be supporting
super,
that
super
too.
Easy to progressively enhance.
Yeah,
which is
absolutely
great.
That's the greatest thing. Yeah, it's super simple to do. You still have your source attribute as your fallback, and then just include the source set with the extra images and you're on your way. You know, it's awesome. Along with that, Apple had a couple more updates to CSS, a little bit more advanced stuff. It supports the @supports media query, essentially, that allows you to kind of switch on more advanced CSS stuff if it's supported, which is kind of cool to see. I don't think a lot of people are going to use that, but it's good to know it's there. And then it supports the backdrop filter CSS property, which is really interesting, which allows you to pull off some really interesting effects to background elements in your email. So you could get away with some cool blurring effects, making things like grayscale, stuff like that. Some more designery type stuff that isn't supported everywhere, but now it's supported in iOS 9 Mail. So that's pretty cool to check out too. But from a purely marketing standpoint, one of the biggest things is this 3D touch that Apple introduced with the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus, where it's this new interaction where you can press lightly on your phone and then press a little bit deeper to do different things in different apps. But in the context of the Mail app, when you're in your inbox, you can do a light press to open up what's called a peek at an email, which will load that email in a little modal window, but doesn't actually kind of dump you into the email itself. But in that same motion, you can press a little bit harder on the device and it will dump you into the email itself. So a lot of email marketers were worried about whether or not this would affect open rates, how people are measuring engagement with the email itself. But the good news is that that peak actually opens up the images itself. So if you're tracking your emails, all of that hinges on an image being downloaded from a server and tracked that way. So those email opens will still be counted even when people are just using peaks. But I think the main thing to note is that your engagement might fall off, because if you don't have really good, interesting, relevant content, then somebody might peek at the email and then they'll just delete it with a simple swipe instead of actually digging into it, spending more time in the email, and hopefully taking whatever action you want them to within the email itself.
It begs the question, is the fold back? Does the fold exist again now?
There's definitely some talk about it. And I feel like I hate using the term fold, but in this context, I think it definitely comes into play a little bit more. But that just kind of speaks to the need for people to really think about what they're sending their subscribers and make sure, you know, it works well, it's valuable, and they'll get something from it and want to actually open it up. And I think you made the point of our, not this past conference, but the year before we did our talk, Designing for Motion Email, where I forget the direct quote, but you said something like a truly great email designer will have their email open before it's even sent, because you're sending such great content that people will open your emails no matter what. And that's what you want to be doing. So even in these scenarios, there might be that fold, but your content's so great, people are going to open your emails regardless of who you are.
I think the big thing to consider is your audience. You know, do you have a really large mobile audience, and are they opening on iOS? You know that iOS users are going to be upgrading to the new OS anyways. It's not like it's Android where you're going to have a fragmented market. You know your users will be.
I think like a week after it was over 50% update rate or something like that.
So it's important to relate it back to your audience, mm-hmm. and then you can really figure out how important it is for you. But I think what's interesting too is that it's not, I could be wrong, but I'm assuming that this peak is going to be different dimensions and sizes based on the device, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm assuming you have an iPhone 6 Plus, this peak is going to look bigger than it will.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a fluid modal between the 6 Plus and the 6S or whatever.
Yeah, I assume it's going to be varying sizes, which is interesting. And so your design can't be truly fixed in that sense, right? It's not just one view. I think it's going to be multiple peak views, which is interesting. And also interesting from the analytics perspective, like, we might have to figure out what those dimensions are, the different peak dimensions, and then maybe even figure out like how to fire off a background image for those different, you know, viewports. So you can see what device users are peaking at and how to differentiate between
peak opens. Yeah, it's an entirely new kind of engagement metric.
It's a new engagement. And I think I think from a macro perspective, looking at the big picture, I think it'll be interesting to see, do other devices in OSs, I guess you could say, adopt this type of behavior? Because I think it's one thing if Apple just has this, but I think if you then see Android adopt this behavior in this new mechanism, then it becomes a behavior that's going to be standard across all platforms. So I think from a macro level, like, big picture, that's what we should all be looking at and focused on, like, because it's easy to ignore this in the near term, but over time, does this become like a real trend that people latch onto? And that's when I think this whole peak view becomes a much bigger concern for us as designers.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good to know that this is very specific to Apple right now, and it all hinges on that 3D touch capability on the new iPhones. But, you know, this wouldn't be the first time where Apple's kind of leading the way on innovating in technology and something like Android picking that up and device manufacturers implementing something like that. So, yeah, I think it has that potential to be a new paradigm that we have to account for in our email designs and our tracking.
Yeah, the peak and pop stuff, that was the most interesting part to me on the iOS 9 stuff, and I'm just fascinated to see where it goes. So, all right, we're going to get into hybrid / spongy development next. Just want to take a minute to let you know you can check the podcast out at emaildesignpodcast.com. Full show notes and links are right there. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud, and be sure to tweet along with the hashtag Email Design Podcast. Any questions you have, want us to talk about something on the show, just hit us up there. And you can check out litmus.com/gift card and input the coupon code podcast for a free 14-day trial of Litmus. Litmus is the best way to build, test, and monitor your email. You can do all three of those things so easy, and it's how we actually use it here at Litmus ourselves to do all of our email. We'll build with Litmus Builder, the editor for email design and development, best out there on the market for it. Then you can go in and test, make sure you test your email, make sure it looks great in over 40 different email clients, Outlook, iPhone, all the iOS 9 stuff. It's already live. You can test an iOS 9 on Litmus right now. Gmail, Office 365, all the different email clients that you might have trouble in, you can check and make sure they look great there. And then, as we just mentioned, all the great analytics. You get to see how engaged with your users are with your emails. You can see how long they read the email for. You can see where they're opening your email. So you can figure out, hey, is this iOS 9 an important thing for me to focus on when I'm designing my emails? Do I need to be worried about this new peak stuff? You can see how many of your users are opening on iPhone and the new iOS 9. So, great way to build, test, and monitor your email with Litmus. Just go to litmus.com/gift card and input the coupon code podcast for a free 14-day trial. All right, Jason, let's get into hybrid and spongy development.
Yeah, hybrid. This interesting topic that's been going on for a while, a lot of discussion around it, but it seems like the debate between hybrid and non-hybrids getting a little bit more heated lately, which is awesome. It's great to have these conversations amongst email designers, amongst the email community. But this one was kind of sparked off by Ted Goez. I never know how to pronounce his last name. I'll have to ask him next time I see him. But over on Medium, he wrote this quick post about whether or not responsive emails without media queries are really necessary, whether or not we should cater to Gmail and their lack of support for media queries, essentially with the declaration that he's going to give the big old F you to Gmail right now for the time being, because he doesn't want to jump through the hoops to start coding with a hybrid approach. I like that he had an epilogue to this post, kind of noting that this discussion took place. There was a lot of discussion on Twitter. He's talked to a lot of different email designers that have varying opinions on this, and conceding the fact that a lot of people do need to worry about Gmail. So that hybrid approach is really necessary for them. But right now, his stakeholders aren't clamoring for mobile Gmail support. They understand that email clients render things differently and it's not a high priority for them. So it was just a really interesting conversation to see how different email designers have to worry about different things, whether or not they should all switch to hybrid, whether or not Gmail is actually going to update their email app anytime soon. But a great discussion that I think is something that the email community really needs a lot more of.
Yeah. And I think Ted is feeling the same way. And I think his position's even changed a little bit since he posted this. But I think the sentiment at the time in which he wrote this article is that of many people is, why should we be catering to Gmail? Why should we be spending all of this extra development time just to cater for Gmail? Mm-hmm. And I think from my perspective, it's a backwards way of thinking to, and quite honestly, quite naive to feel that we developers have power to change Gmail and their rendering. We haven't ever been able to do that yet. And so I don't think making stuff look terrible on mobile is really going to help anybody. Yeah. It doesn't really help our cause to get Gmail to render stuff better because we're just such a small fraction of the audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think emails will look bad for most people. Most people will send out bad looking emails on Gmail, whether we do it or not. Like, we're such a small portion of the audience. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, we just really need to think about the subscribers and the experience that they're getting. So from my perspective, even though I don't like Gmail and I don't like doing things to work around them and to, you know, essentially prolong their terrible rendering by finding these hacks around it, at the end of the day, I still put the subscribers before Gmail.
Yeah.
And so subscribers and creating a great experience for them and getting the email to look great for them is more important at the end of the day. And that's how I think from like just a big picture view, that's how we should look at it. Now we can get down into individual use cases though. If you don't have a very large mobile audience, especially on Android, and therefore Gmail or just figuring out Gmail, then it may not be worth your development effort. I think the same could be said for responsive email, not just this hybrid and spongy development. I think there's a case for not even focusing on responsive email right now if you have a very small audience in it. You know, I think Litmus, we weren't responsive for the longest time and people kind of, you know, took jabs at us. But the fact of the matter is we were getting less than 10% opens on.
Yeah, we're on B2B. We have business users for subscribers for the most part. So we could get away with desktop specific layouts. But since we care about email.
So
we,
I think, it all comes down to your audience and your individual use case for it. If you do have a large mobile audience or even a significant, you know, a good portion, I think it's something you should spend the time just to change your email templates and code base to a hybrid method, and even simplify things if you have to. Really, doing a one column hybrid approach is not that hard or complex. It's when you get into multiple columns to where that's when things can get a little bit more, they can be a little bit more work and, you know, add a little bit more technical debt to it. But I think that, you know, you should do it if there's even a little bit and spend the time to do it. But again, if it's not worth it and it's not a part of your audience, then I wouldn't really, you know, go out too much. Mm-hmm. And that's totally, I think, reasonable and understandable, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things here. The first is, yeah, I think you made the good point that as much as we've complained about Gmail, they haven't changed anything for us. So I used to take that same approach where I said, you know, screw Gmail. I'm not going to worry about doing hybrid stuff. I don't want to learn it. Because Gmail hopefully will fix themselves at some point in the near future. But I think we've all seen that that isn't likely to happen anytime soon, which sucks, but that's what it is. So yeah, then we're left to, our responsibility to the subscribers and whether or not we agree with Gmail, our responsibility is solely to the subscribers, making sure their experiences work well, and regardless of their email clients, we need to do that. But I think it's interesting to note too that, you know, I've avoided hybrid for a long time just because I didn't have the free time to devote to learning about it or digging into the code, you know, or a lot of people have fears that the hybrid approach kind of bloats your code or it makes updating templates very difficult. But I think it's interesting to note that back in August's TED C, Fabio had a great presentation on the hybrid approach and really showed that it's not that difficult when you actually dig into it. It doesn't really add any more, a lot of extra code, because you're not, instead of doing things in media queries and handling everything in media queries, you add in a few ghost columns and some Outlook conditional stuff to make things work. So has the added benefit of working pretty much everywhere really well. And it doesn't have a lot of extra bloat that a lot of us have worried about for a long time. But yeah, again, it really does come down to knowing your audience and whether or not it's worth it for you and your company and your subscribers to actually update or stick with your tried and true methods. Yeah, that's what it comes down to.
And with that, we want to get into an article from Mike Reagan over at Action Rocket that talks more about a certain hybrid shape. So he created a four-column hybrid shape with an Outlook.com hack for it. And again, one of my favorite blogs, Action Rocket blog, labs.actionrocket.co. Great stuff. Little hack posts like this all the time. And he was essentially expanding upon Nicole Merlin wrote a post on Campaign Monitor on the method of centering without media queries and her hybrid approach, which was really great. And he sort of expanded upon this to get a 2x2 column stacking without media queries. Mm-hmm. And the little, I guess, wrinkle you could say that he added into this was that he wanted to try to find a workaround, make the code a little bit more flexible without having fixed widths on the inline divs. So essentially, he has a regular hybrid wrapper as usual. And what was really cool is that he wanted to have equal like guttering on each sides of the blocks. So being able to have a 10 pixel gutter essentially. And that this is what made it really cool. So you essentially have your full width table, you know, and you max width it out. So in this instance, he input an example of 680 pixels for the wrapper. So visually the email appears to be 660 pixels, but the second wrapper is actually going to be 680 pixels with margin on the left and right of 10 pixels for the gutter. And so what was cool is that he was just able to do that. You essentially split out the Outlook conditional comments for the tables to be 330, and those are there inside their own table cells. And then inside those table cells, you have the different divs that are displayed inline block. And on those divs is where you can put in the margin right and left of 10 pixels. But for Outlook.com, since it doesn't support the margin property, at least out of the box, you just include a class of ECX margin hack. And then you can, instead of using margin, input padding on the left and right of 10 pixels. And now I think what's interesting is knowing with the Outlook.com hack, you might be able to just change the margin with a, instead of using the lowercase m, using the capital M, and that might work instead as maybe a simpler, elegant solution. But again, the Outlook.com rendering is going to be going away too. So this hack might be, you know, on its way out, but it was just an interesting approach to it, a little wrinkle to the hybrid approach and getting a 2x2 column stacking correctly with gutters and using a little Outlook hack, which I liked. So yeah, hat tip to Mike Reagan and a cool little hack there on the hybrid shape.
Yeah. I think best thing is that Mike actually spends so much time doing things like this.
Yeah.
He made comments what Tuesday nights were made for is weird projects like this. Now we just need to get start posting these snippets on Snippets and Community instead of CodePen, and we will be set.
Yeah, yeah. It's all on CodePen, so you can go and play around with it and see how it works. So, and yeah, we'll have to go over Fabio's stuff, like you mentioned. He has some new stuff that makes it even more responsive without media queries, which is just madness. But that'll have to be for a future episode, because that's it for this episode of the podcast. Again, check out the podcast episodes, emaildesignpodcast.com. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud and tweet along with the hashtag emaildesignpodcast. And hey, don't forget, free 14-day trial of Litmus. Just go to litmus.com/giftcard and use the coupon code podcast. All right, until next time, email geeks, we are reminding you to keep your table cells aligned and your styles in line. See ya.